Well, this week, after 12 years, the last Australian troops left Afghanistan. It's been Australia's longest ever combat deployment, with 40 soldiers killed and 261 seriously wounded. As the troops head home from their main base in Uruzgan province, we thought it'd be timely to revisit our interview with Ben Quilty, the Australian war artist. Ben got the opportunity to spend a month with Aussie troops in Afghanistan, painting, sketching, and observing their lives on the front line. As an official Australian war artist, Ben got incredible access to the daily lives of Australian soldiers. I spoke with him earlier this year and started by asking him about his most terrifying moment on the front lines.
Well, physically for me, my own life flashing before my eyes, which I thought there's no way I'll have that experience. But the first night in Kandahar, three rockets came into the base. And the Taliban literally sets them up on rocks out in the darkness in the desert, quite hauntingly beautiful dark desert in the middle of the night. And they literally have a cigarette attached to a fuse. I was going to call it a wick, but that's not the right word, to a fuse, and the cigarette literally goes down to the end and then ignites the rocket, and the rocket is loosely aimed at the Kandahar airfield. And that was a terrifying moment. The first one of those, I was talking to a group of young Australian soldiers, and suddenly before my eyes they all hit the deck down in the dust. And one of the young women looked up to me and said, "Ben, that alarm is a rocket alarm. Get down, put your face on the ground." And I lay on my back because I thought, if it's going to hit me, I want to at least see it. It's just a perverse thing that overcame me to lie on my back and look up. And that was a horrible feeling, dark. And they used humour instantly as it was happening. As I'm lying there, they're laughing and saying, "Don't worry, Ben, you won't be hit. You're more likely to be hit by a bus in Sydney than you are to be hit by a rocket in Kandahar," which is crap. The bus drivers, some of them are grumpy, but some of them are lovely, and they drive carefully, and not many people are hit.
You're obviously taking public transport home.
I never. Yes. And that sort of profound use of humour to get through that. At first, I didn't understand it. It seemed absurd, and I thought, no, I need to feel like you're being serious in this moment of my terror. But then by the next morning, and that night I went to bed, and you know that if the rocket hits your sleeping accommodation, it will come straight through. It's protected for shrapnel, but not for a direct hit. And the next morning, I woke up and sort of had to get a grip and quickly realise that the humour is just used as a tool to survive the emotions of it.
You said that your life flashed before your eyes, literally, which people often mean metaphorically. I mean, did it actually happen? Did you kind of get a sense of your own mortality? And how did you feel about your life when that happened?
I felt like I hadn't painted enough paintings. And I had a real sense of the frailty of skin. I was thinking about my body, really in a physical sense, about the skin and the lack of protection. And even if you're wearing body armour, which I wasn't at that point, the body armour is not going to protect you from that. You'll be lucky to survive being hit by shrapnel from a rocket.
What sort of preconceptions did you have about the people that you would meet in the Australian Army, and how much of that was right, and what was surprising?
It was only once I got there that I realised that my entire understanding of a soldier was probably through film. Rambo at the worst, and really I had no idea. So I did have preconceptions. I imagined that they would be pretty brusque and have possibly not a lot of patience with an artist who was wearing a navy blue uniform who stood out on the side of the desert in Afghanistan. But they were intrigued to meet me, and they were as intrigued to meet me as I was to meet them. I think I was something very different in their otherwise quite, mundane existence, spiked with these moments of absolute terror and threat and death. So they really were engaged, and they had been told, they'd all been warned that I was coming. I'm not sure that warned is the right word, but I wasn't really a threat. Although, that's debatable.
Well,
I ended up getting some of them naked, but
yeah.
That's threatening. But, I photographed one group of young special operations commando unit in Taran Kot in their base doing a yoga class at 9 o'clock one morning. I was given a book by another fella who was in the SAS from Perth on meditation techniques, and he was talking to me about how he uses meditation constantly through his deployments. I was given some amazing, very sort of left-leaning film documentaries to put onto my computer by, that I'd never heard of, made in America about the Iraq War. So, you know, they're quite more intellectual than I assumed as well.
One of the other striking things about the exhibition is the people that you've portrayed, and you've kind of alluded to that already. I'd just like to talk about a couple of them, if you're comfortable with it. Can you tell us about Air Commodore John Oddie and your experiences with him as a person and then as a subject for art?
I met John in the mess hall of the restaurant in Al Minhad Air Base in Dubai, and I jumped up from my table because one of the young men I was with said, "That's Air Commodore John Oddie. He's the second in command, and he's by far the highest ranking officer that was on the base at that time." And, you know, being an artist and not fulfilling the way rank works, I jumped up and they took a collective sigh of horror that I was going to run over and introduce myself to this man. And I could feel them all putting their heads down and wishing that I hadn't done it. But I was struck by him instantly, very quietly spoken, quite compassionate man who really empowered me and said, "Ben, you if you don't get what you want, you go and ask people. We all know that you're here. And if anyone gets in your way, you just go above their rank." He was the only person who told me that I had an equivalent rank of a lieutenant colonel, which I didn't really need to know. But he really empowered me by giving me that information to go and use the residency that I had to tell their story. And then when I got back, he also told me that he was retiring to a little town that I would never have heard of, and it happened to be the town that I live in, which is just mind-blowing. And I think that he probably really thought then that I was on some
artist
drugs. Yeah. And so I did. I looked him up. People in the Defence Force asked me to leave him alone. They said that one of them said they thought he was having a nervous breakdown and I should leave him alone. And I thought, no, I'm telling their story, and that's an obvious part of it. I'd seen that already. I'd met people who were suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder who were actively during deployment in Afghanistan and wouldn't admit it to their officers. So I went and found him, and he was just so open and wanting to talk. The first time I saw him, he could barely hold a conversation. He was a wreck, but really could communicate to me the struggle that he was dealing with and that he wanted to be involved and that he wanted me to help him tell his story.
Has being a war artist changed you as an artist overall?
Definitely. This is the first show that I haven't been able to use humour. And I've always been able, you know, turn my baby boy into a hamburger. It's really funny, and it has some loose comment about, you know, materialism or whatever. With this show, there's no way I could use humour. It's not funny. It's really not a funny thing. And it was a confronting and sort of emotionally draining experience. And they use humour over there, but that's their story, and it's just a tool for their emotional survival. When I came back, it's definitely the most important message that I've had to portray, and in a lot of ways it's been a collaboration with these people, because without them the show doesn't exist. And when there's a lot of tears in my studio, not just from John but from me and from quite a few of the young guys that I worked with, for them, I wanted them to be able to share their stories. I was in close contact with the psychiatrists that were helping some of them to know that I was doing the right thing, that this was helping and not a hindrance. And I was constantly told that it was a bright moment in an otherwise bleak year.
Well, it's been a very bright moment discussing it with you. It's a fantastic exhibition, and I say that not only out of aesthetic appreciation, but given what you've said, out of sheer fear. Ben Quilty, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks.
On RN Drive.
Thanks for having me. When will you pose naked?
I'm not even wearing anything now.